ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's get ready to rumble!
The head slap was to do two purposes. One was to give myself an initial head start on the pass rush. In other words, an extra step. Because anytime you go upside a man's head or a woman.
And again.
Because anytime you go upside a man's head or a woman.
And again.
Because anytime you go upside a man's head or a woman, then they have a tendency to blink their eyes or close their eyes, and that was all I needed.
David Deacon Jones was a defensive end whose head slap maneuver helped him intimidate offensive linemen to the point where he often encountered little resistance on his way to the quarterback.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
There is a terrorist threat in America, and we can barely detect that our country's been wrecked by barbarians, derelict clerics with exotic names like Trent Lott and Catherine Harris. I'm going to Paris because they killed democracy in Florida. Quick, call the coroner. There's been a hostile takeover of the red, white, and blue. They finance corporate mergers, so when Enron and Congress fuck, everybody gets screwed. They're holding hostages in hot factories overseas. They torture their victims with long hours and slave wages. They crave little girls, mostly Southeast Asian and Haitian. I've seen the videotape, so R. Kelly isn't the only one who should be charged with child molestation. There is a terrorist threat in the land, and it's not just the boy bands. They have a plan. It's inherited through history. They destroyed the native tribes. Now each July they celebrate their victory. Instead of making things more equal, they build prisons for poor people, pass out petty bids and life sentences to kids for selling weed and other sedatives. But they disregard the evidence when they select a rich white boy from Texas and declare a crackhead president. A draft-dodging merchant of menace with a feeble mind, and before he bombs Saddam on my dime, he better send weapons inspectors into Columbine. There is a terrorist threat in the nation. They give tax breaks to big banks but deny black people reparations. They maintain training ranches and congregating clans. They want to steal Alaska's oil, then blame it on Iran. They tally bans and censor art for sport. They snuck into our law schools and hijacked the Supreme Court. Their money makes missiles. Their labs created anthrax. Osama was their pawn. Evil is their axis. They're skilled at killing innocent civilians because they've had lots of practice. From Hanoi to Nicaragua, from Vieques to Damascus, for agua and oil, gold, zinc, and soil. They spread their views on cable news. They call each other George and Dick and Rudy. So next time you see a terrorist, kick him in his booty. It's not only your right as an American, it's your patriotic duty.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Moderator for Report on Integration is CBS News Washington correspondent Gripping Bancroft.
Well, the headlines in the news about school integration in the South right now are all in Little Rock, Arkansas. But in addition, there is still the broader question. Just what progress has integration made in the South since the Supreme Court outlawed separate schools in its decision of May 17, 1954? What is the background of Little Rock, and what will be its effect on the future? What is the situation in the South today? The four newsmen with us here today are members of a group that started soon after the Supreme Court decision to report to the people of the southern and border states on the status of integration. They are members of the Southern Education Reporting Service, an organization of southern newspaper editors and educators who are dedicated to the idea that there is a vital need for objective and nonpartisan reporting in this field. It is in this nonpartisan vineyard that our guests have labored. So Mr. Shoemaker, as Executive Director of the Southern Education Reporting Service, suppose we start with you and ask you to give us a general picture of just what is the status of integration in the South today.
Yes, Mr. Bancroft, let me give it to you very briefly.
There is a considerable amount of desegregation in the border states, the upper tier of states. There is a lesser amount in the states of the Mid-South, in fact, a very small amount, and pretty solid segregation in the Deep South. There are 745 school districts which have desegregated since 1954 out of about 3,000 that are biracial.
Well, before we go any farther, Mr. Shoemaker, I wonder if I could ask you to explain briefly just what your organization is and how it works and how you get this information.
Yes, Southern Education Reporting Service was set up in 1954, as you said, to trace developments in this field. We get our information through a corps of correspondents, of whom these three gentlemen are members, and we publish Southern School News, and we have just preparing to bring out this book with all deliberate speed, which summarizes the developments in this field in the 3 years since the Supreme Court
and
decision.
And these newsmen here, I know they have each contributed a chapter to this book, and they are part of your staff, in effect.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes, each one of them has contributed among 11 contributors.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Mr. James has written one of the opening chapters, which deals in large part with the situation in the border states. And if you'd like, we might begin at that point.
I think that's fine.
Weldon James?
Mr. James.
A general summary.
Well, as Mr. Shoemaker was saying, in the border states, there's been a much higher degree of compliance with the court's decree. I think it'd be worthwhile to limit ourselves briefly to a look at what happened in Kentucky, which regards itself as a southern state, but which has not followed the Deep South pattern. The moment the Supreme Court ruled in 1954, the governor of Kentucky, at that time Governor Weatherby, said immediately that Kentucky will do whatever is necessary to comply with the law. The Republican senator, the only one at that time, Senator John Sherman Cooper, said just about the same thing. And then various state officials and school superintendents like Mr. Carmichael in Louisville all sort of got onto the general compliance theme and said it was more or less inevitable, let's face it, and get on with it. In the 3 years since then, we've had no integration the first year because of local legal rulings as far as state law were concerned until the Supreme Court's implementation ruling in 1955. Immediately that year, several districts desegregated. In the past 2 years, including the opening of school this month, you now have 105 districts in Kentucky desegregated out of 217. But in those 105 districts, you have 80% of the Negro school-age pupils of the state.
That is pretty well the border pattern, with the possible exception of Delaware, and then quite the other side of it. West Virginia, I believe, since the opening of schools this year, is the first state to have 100% desegregation in its counties.
Yes. Well, mind you, I think we couldn't leave the border states without pointing out that they have had their troubles, as all readers of newspaper headlines know. The city of Louisville had remarkably little or none at a time when other cities or towns in Kentucky were, having the National Guard called out and state troopers sent in a year ago.
Well, now, what about the Deep South? Mr. Workman, you're stationed in that area. That is your bailiwick, is it? What is the status of things there?
Yes, Mr. Bancroft, and the story with respect to the Deep South is completely different from that Mr. James has just described. With all deliberate speed in those eight states with which I'm most concerned, at least in this book, has been that the deliberate speed has been, in almost every instance, in the opposite direction. That is, towards strengthening segregation and maintaining the separate schools which have existed through the years. Now, there's been recently, and in fact, the only crack that has been made in that solid wall of resistance has come this year, beginning of this school year, in North Carolina, with the admission of Negroes to schools on a very limited basis and after screening in the towns of Charlotte, Raleigh, and Winston-Salem. That was done with the...
Bill, Greensboro, yes, instead of Raleigh.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes Greensboro. But the fact of the matter is that in each of these instances, it was done by the action of the local school board in accord with the North Carolina Pupil Placement Law, which, as I said, makes for screening and admission of selected Negro students to these white schools. But other than for that, if you take the huge crescent that we call the Deep South, and that sweeps from Virginia through North and South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, with Florida thrown in. The resistance there has been, to use a Virginia term, massive. And there is now, with the exception of the three North Carolina communities I mentioned, there has not been admitted any Negro student to any white school in that entire area in the 3 years since the decision.
Developing tonight, hundreds of Jefferson County students from nearly a dozen schools skip class to take a stand against the district's administration. This was the scene today. Look at all those kids at Arvada High School. It was a similar scene outside Arvada West today, too, as students, parents, and some staff members upset about proposed changes to advanced placement U.S. history classes. They, too, stood out by the streets today. Suzanne McCarroll live at Lakewood High School for us tonight. And Suzanne, you just talked with the superintendent.
Well, Karen, as you mentioned, students were protesting all across the district, but that's also why the superintendent was quietly meeting with some smaller groups of students also all around the district.
Teach us the truth!
At Golden High School. At Arvada High School. At Arvada West High, students are out in all quadrants of the district. They say they're here to support their teachers and their education.
Where are we without our education, you know?
Some are well-versed in the current dispute over proposed changes by the school board.
This is to create a committee that would revise the AP United States History textbook so that it would include less about civil disobedience and promote patriotism.
Others have no idea what the controversy is. And what's the cause?
What's the cause? History. I don't know. I'm out here because
some parents are here to promote the education of future high school students.
I'm concerned with the spending, ridiculous amounts of spending that have nothing to do with the education of our students.
Clearly, some here are passionate about this cause.
Everything that the board does that affects the teachers, it affects the kids as well.
Others simply don't want to miss the chance to miss class.
They're over here screaming education. They're not even in class getting to class. They're just out here screaming.
Now, the superintendent talked to us just about an hour ago. He says he totally supports these peaceful protests by the students. And here's what else he had to say.
I hope now that they've taken these steps and made their point that everybody will take a breath and let's get back to learning and see what happens on October 2nd.
Now, some of the students tonight say they plan to launch an email campaign to truly notify the board, the school board, of all their concerns.
When I walk into this classroom, it's kind of like I'm the student and they're the teacher. It's really something.
Having made repeated claims that she learns more from her students than she could ever hope to teach them, Cincinnati area 10th grade chemistry teacher Jennifer Steenman was recently fired from her position at Jefferson High School, where the self-described lifelong learner failed to teach her students the school's basic science curriculum.
These kids have had such an impact on my life. I just learned so much from them. And it sounds cliche, but you could almost say I got more out of it than they did.
I don't know what they did in there, but it couldn't have had much to do with 10th grade chemistry. I mean, Jennifer is obviously a very sweet person, but these kids need to walk out of here with some basic fundamental knowledge. They never even went over the periodic table. She has to teach these kids scientific nomenclature, not be their little buddy.
Bray says Steenman's failure to meet the school's baseline expectations ultimately led to her termination, noting that consecutive meetings between Steenman and faculty administrators did nothing to improve her subpar performance as an educator. Several students were sad to learn of their teacher's firing, though few were surprised to hear the news.
Mrs. Steenman was always really nice, but every time I'd stay after class to get help, she was kind of all over the place. One time she was just going on about how she hoped that I was as inspired by her as she was by me. Sometimes I just want to shake her and say, just teach us photosynthesis. Tell me about vectors. I mean, isn't that her job?
So,
let's talk about tasers. You know, I was shocked to hear about a news story coming out of an elementary school in New Mexico where a career day presentation by a police officer resulted in a 10-year-old student taking a 50,000-volt taser shot to the chest. That's right, a New Mexico cop tased a 10-year-old. Why, you may ask? Well, because the kid refused to clean his cop car. Aside from thinking, what the hell is this world coming to, this story got me thinking about how dangerous these supposedly less than lethal weapons are.
Come on, let's go. Welcome to the United Snakes, land of the thief, home of the slave. Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and proud. Let's do this shit for real, come on now. Smoke and mirrors, stripes and stars, stoning for the cross in the name of God. Bloodshed, genocide, rape and fraud, written to the pages of the law, good law. The cold continent latchkey child ran away one day and started acting foul. King of where the wild things are, daddy's proud, cause the Roman Empire done passed it down. Imported and tortured a workforce and never healed the wounds or shook the curse off. Not a grown-up Goliath nation holding open auditions for the part of David. Can you feel? Nothing can save you. You question the rain, you get rushed in and chained up. Fish raised, but I must be insane, cause I can't figure a single goddamn way to change.
This shocking video shows the moment a South Carolina state trooper fired gunshots at an unarmed driver at a petrol station.
Can I see your license, please?
Get out of the car! Get out of the car! Get on the ground! Get on the ground!
I just got my license! You're taking my license!
The officer asked Lever Edward Jones for his driving license, and when he went to reach for it, the policeman started shooting at him.
Can I see your license, please?
Get out of the car! Get out of the car! Get on the ground! Get on the ground!
Put your hands behind your back.
What did I do, sir?
Are you hit?
I think so. I can't feel my leg. I don't know what happened. I just grabbed my leg.
Brakes on A66. I need a 1052.
Why did you shoot me?
Well, you dove head first back into your car.
I'm sorry.
Then you jumped back out. I'm telling you to get out of your car.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear two words, sir.
Hold on a sec.
The trooper told Jones he was being pulled over for a seatbelt violation and fired four shots at him.
Your seatbelt violation, sir.
Seatbelt? I just pulled it off right there at the corner to pull in the gas station.
Well, I got help come to you, okay? I got help come to you.
Jones suffered a gunshot wound to his hip and was treated in hospital. The officer has now been fired and charged with felony assault. If convicted, he could face up to 20 years in prison.
Welcome to the United Snakes, land of the thief, home of the slave. The Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred. Separate a man from his soul. You only strengthen him and lose your own. But shoot that oath if you walk near the throne. Remind him that this is my home. Now I'm gone.
Police in Savannah, Georgia are under scrutiny for killing a man who was already cuffed in the back of a squad car. Hundreds of people have been demonstrating. They're asking for answers in the death of Charles Smith. According to police, Smith was in handcuffs and he tried to get out of the squad car. One of the officers said they thought Smith had a gun and fired at him. They also say a gun was found under Smith's body at the scene. His mom isn't convinced. She wants answers.
First thing you do when you arrest someone, what you do? You search them and put them in a car. There's no way they could have searched him and put him in a car with a gun on him.
Local police have handed this case and the investigation over to another group to avoid any appearance of bias.
Welcome belongs to the United Snakes. Land of the thief, home of the slave. The grand imperial guard, where the dollar is sacred. I was gone. Welcome to the United Snakes. Land of the thief, home of the slave. The grand imperial guard, where the dollar is sacred. Hold on, give me one right here, hold on. You don't give money to the bums on the corner with a sign bleeding from their gums. Talking about you don't support a crackhead. What you think happens to the money from your taxes? This shit the government's the addict. With $1 billion a week kill brown people habit. And even if you ain't on the front line, when Master yell crunch time, you right back at it. Man, look at how you hustling backwards. At the end of the year, add up what they subtracted. 3 out of 12 months, your salary pay for that madness. Man, that's savage. What's left? Get a big ass plasma to see where they made Dan Rather point the damn camera. Only approved questions get answered. Now stand your ass up for that national anthem.
Tonight, a new key claim from the family of the man shot to death by a Volusia County Sheriff's deputy. It happened Saturday at Friars Towing at the corner of Seagrave Street and Ridgewood Avenue, Daytona Beach. Today, Local 6's Calorama talked to the victim's family, who says the man was deaf.
As soon as we rolled up here at Friars Towing, they rolled this gate shut and threw a lock on it. They wouldn't answer any of our questions. However, Edward Miller's wife has a lot to say about the incident.
He told me that my husband was sitting in the car and the police officer fired 6 shots, one in the head, one in the throat, and 4 on the side of the driver's side door.
Gina Miller says her son Eddie was with her husband Edward Miller when he was shot and killed by Volusia County Deputy Joel Hernandez. The sheriff's office says the deputy heard fighting coming from Friars Towing, and investigators say at some point he felt threatened and shot and killed 52-year-old Miller. Miller was carrying a gun and does have a concealed weapons permit.
I don't believe my husband did anything threatening at all.
So you believe your husband was wrongfully shot?
Yes, I do.
Gina says her husband and son had trouble with Friars releasing this red pickup Friday. Deputies were called out then. They went back to get it Saturday. Gina says her son never heard the deputy confront them before he opened fire.
And if he did say something, my husband wouldn't have heard him because he's deaf. He's a very gentle, family-oriented man.
This past month marked their 30th wedding anniversary, and her son Eddie is taking it the hardest.
He thinks that maybe he could have stopped it, and he's blaming himself.
We counted at least 6 cameras posted here outside of Friars Towing that may reveal what happened during this shooting incident. As for the sheriff's office, they tell me they're still investigating.
Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave. The grand imperial guard, where the dollar is sacred and power is gone. Welcome to the United States, land of the thief, home of the slave. The grand imperial guard, where the dollar is sacred and power is gone.
Billion people demonstrate in favor of global warming. Obama now sleeps with a Louisville Slugger under his bed, and a song is deemed good enough for a man to put his girlfriend on his shoulders, overpowering you with news until all but the slightest trace of your identity is lost. This is the Onion Week in Review. Calling the rapid shifts in temperature nothing short of humiliating, the planet's climate admitted to reporters this week that it was becoming self-conscious about all the changes that are happening to it right now. Sources confirm that the global meteorological meteorological system has grown especially embarrassed about the dangerous storms breaking out across its surface, adding that its inability to control how rapidly its ice caps are deteriorating had become incredibly awkward. Top NASA Administrator Charles Bolden announced his resignation this week, following the disclosure of an email in which he made disparaging statements about the moon, saying he was truly sorry for his words, which he called inappropriate, untrue, and hurtful. Bolden nonetheless stepped down in the face of widespread public outcry over comments which labeled the Earth's sole satellite as useless and a barren eyesore. NASA administrators confirmed that they are currently dispatching a probe to deliver a formal apology to the moon. Saying that a few images of displaced refugees would probably do the trick, all 317 million Americans admitted this week that they could probably be talked into another war. Citizens nationwide told reporters that if they were to see a blurry satellite image of potential nuclear weapons or footage of an evil militant group, they could easily see themselves getting on board with another major military effort.
I'm not saying I'd be gung-ho about it right away, but if they called it something like a concentrated military operation or something other than war at first, I could see myself warming up to the idea. Honestly, just hearing a top official on TV say something like patriotic duty might clinch it.
And so once again, my dear Johnny, my dear friend. And so once again, you are fighting us all. And when I ask you why, you raise your sticks and cry and I fall. Oh my friend, how did you come to trade the fiddle for the drum? You say I have turned like the enemies you earned, but I can remember all the good things you are. And so I ask you please, can I help you find the peace and the star? Oh my friend, what time is this to trade the handshake for the fist? And so once again, oh America, my friend. And so once again, you are fighting us all. And when we ask you why, you raise your sticks and cry and we fall. Oh my friend, how did you come to trade the fiddle for the drum? You say we have turned like the enemies you've earned, but we can remember all the good things you are. And so we ask you please, can we help you find the peace and the star? Oh my friend, we have all come to fear the beating of your drum.
Last night, on my orders, America's armed forces began strikes against ISIL targets in Syria. Earlier this month, I outlined for the American people our strategy to confront the threat posed by the terrorist group known as ISIL. I made clear that as part of this campaign, the United States would take action against targets in both Iraq and Syria so that these terrorists can't find safe haven anywhere. We were joined in this action by our friends and partners, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Jordan, Bahrain, and Qatar. America is proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with these nations on behalf of our common security. The strength of this coalition makes it clear to the world that this is not America's fight alone. Above all, the people and governments of the Middle East are rejecting ISIL and standing up for the peace and security that the people of the region and the world deserve. Last night, we also took strikes to disrupt plotting against the United States and our allies by seasoned al-Qaeda operatives in Syria who are known as the Khorasan Group. And once again, it must be clear to anyone who would plot against America and try to do Americans harm that we will not tolerate safe havens for terrorists who threaten our people. The overall effort will take time. There will be challenges ahead. But we're going to do what's necessary to take the fight to this terrorist group for the security of the country and the region and for the entire world.
You can be right or you can be popular, and we live in a democracy.
Right.
Here come the butchers to cut you into profit, a profit, a profit, a profit, a profit.
Hey, ISIS. You were bombed by a woman. Oh, yeah. Hell came down on ISIS in Syria because guess what? The first female pilot piloting for the UAE, there she was, leading the strikes, dropped the bombs on ISIS on Monday night. This is really incredible. Major Miriam Al-Mansouri is who did this. Remarkable. Very excited. I wish it was an American pilot. I'll take a woman doing this any day to them. I hope that hurt extra bad from you, because in some Arab countries, women can't even drive. Her nickname, per Jennifer Griffin, Lady Liberty.
There you go.
Problem is, after she bombed it, she couldn't park it.
Now, did you really have to ruin my
life? I salute her.
Would that be considered boobs on the ground or no?
Time now for one more thing. Mr. Bowling.
Okay, for my one more thing tonight, I want to go back to yesterday. About this time, I made a joke. When I got home, I got the look and realized some people didn't think it was funny at all. I said sorry to my wife, and I apologize to all of you as well. I just want to make that very clear.
Lord, I apologize.
Next.
And you love women and have respect for them.
And I do.
All right.
Let's hear it. Why is the Arab world so easily offended?
Can I be if I can't be me?
Let's talk the cost involved here in this campaign. On the first night, 47 Tomahawk cruise missiles were launched. Each of those cost $500,000, so that's over $23 million. Plus, the U.S. is using the new F-22 Raptor, a stealth fighter, which each costs about $412 million. That's a big price tag for the U.S. taxpayer, Colonel Francona.
Yeah, it is. Okay, first let's talk about the Raptor. It's an expensive piece of equipment, but it's in the inventory. So whether you use an F-15 or an F-22, the cost of the operation isn't that much different. We've already purchased the thing. It's a sunken cost. So we might as well use the best that we have. The Tomahawks, yes, that's an expense every time you fire one of these, $500,000. But looking at it from the operator's point of view, and I'm sure Jim will back me up on this, you want our troops to have the absolute best equipment they can get. You want this stuff to work. If you're going to put people in harm's way carrying these weapons to a target or firing a weapon from a ship, you want it to work.
Yeah, but no doubt you want it to work, but still, that is a lot of this is being all funded by the American taxpayer, and the people at home are saying, my goodness, I have to pay for this.
We do have to pay for this. This is an expensive proposition. But the alternative is to not take any action and let ISIS run amok.
But Colonel, isn't the alternative to get some of the Arab states to help pay for this? Why are we footing the whole bill?
Well, I don't know that we are. We don't know what the contribution of the entire coalition is. States like that aren't providing troop but have volunteered to be part of the coalition. Let's give, for example, maybe Kuwait. I've heard that Kuwait is providing funding for some of these operations, and that would be a vital part. Remember Desert Storm? Many of these Arab states provided lots of funding that we used to purchase the weapons that we did use.
Joining me now, Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, member of the Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committees, who is already planning, even before these strikes, to speak later this morning in Washington on his call for Congress to have a say in striking ISIS. Senator Kaine, thanks so much for coming to the program.
You bet, Luke.
Quite simply, should President Obama order these airstrikes without specific congressional approval?
They began during the congressional recess in August, and when they began, I think the president had a legitimate concern that ISIL's momentum put U.S. embassy personnel at risk. It was a defensive mission. He has the ability to defend embassy. But I think the mission has now switched to an offensive mission, clearly, and I think Congress should be weighing in. It was unclear whether Congress intended to do anything, frankly, because leadership was saying the president has all the power he needs. But in the last 2 weeks, the leadership, I think, has changed. They do acknowledge the president needs authorization. We will take up an authorization. And we voted, Luke, as you know, last week for probably the most controversial piece of the president's plan, which was the arming and training of rebels inside Syria. I wish we were having that debate on the authorization right now, but with Senator Menendez on the Foreign Relations Committee as the chair saying we are going to take up an authorization, I'm confident that we will get to that in November.
But these specific strikes in Syria, do you feel they should have gotten their own vote, these ones in Syria?
Yes, I think, look, the Constitution is pretty clear. The president always has the ability to defend the United States against any kind of an imminent attack. But as soon as a president decides, as the president described it to Chuck Todd a few weeks ago, to go on offense against ISIL, if it's not just a defensive mission but an offensive one, that's when Congress is needed. That's what the Constitution says. And I don't agree with the claims of some that the 2001 and 2002 authorizations cover this military action.
Whoa.
gruesome case of workplace violence in Oklahoma and a heroic end to one man's rampage. Police say a man beheaded a woman after he was fired from his job at an Oklahoma food processing plant. Police say after 30-year-old Alton Nolan killed Colleen Hufford, he then attacked another woman at Vaughn's Food Distribution Warehouse in Moore, Oklahoma. The plant's chief operating officer is also a sheriff's deputy. Mark Vaughn shot Nolan, and police say he probably stopped a mass killing.
This was not going to stop if he didn't stop it. So, I mean, we are looking at him. He's obviously a hero in this situation.
The FBI is investigating the suspect's background after coworkers said he recently started trying to convert employees to Islam.
Jihadists send their violent message worldwide via social media. U.S. publishers have hit back with a propaganda campaign of their own. They've put confronting images of crucified Islamic State militants in children's coloring books. Gyanesh Chakan spoke with a co-founder, I should say, of indeed the publishing company.
One publishing company in the U.S. decided to teach children about the crimes of the Islamic State group in a coloring book. The company has actually updated their older edition of coloring books on terrorism for children. 3 years ago, the graphic 9/11 themed edition ignited a firestorm of controversy, having been labeled everything from disaster porn to anti-Muslim propaganda. The founder of the company that publishes the coloring books is with us today, Wayne Bell. Sir, one of the pages shows a crucified man and says, beheading, murdering, cutting in half the bodies of innocent men, women, and children. This is what ISIS wants to bring to America and its people. What are you going to do when they come for you? Are you sure that kind of a question should be addressed to children?
Well, every day, children, parents, teachers, educators hear the same exact news on TV. What this book allows children to do, and it allows parents to do, is it allows a parent to sit down with the child and explain to them exactly what's going on. These are real images. These are real issues. The real horror here is the fact that there are terrorists that would murder you and everybody else in this country because we do not believe in Allah. That's the story right there.
Well, number one, if you wanted to fix on the government side, I would give the president $1 billion sign-on bonus the first day. So that way someone like an Elon Musk may want to actually be interested in the job rather than $400K in free rent. They spend that on toothpaste anyway for the military.
Sure.
Number two, give him 8 years and impeach him if he misbehaves. Don't waste 4 years getting the second 4 years. The thing I like about billionaires is them and homeless people have a lot in common. They both don't give a crap anymore and they can't be bribed. The third thing then is the Office for Government Accountability is paid by the government to audit the government.
Right.
And they haven't filed a qualified opinion yet.
Right. So they're governing themselves.
The
which
audit
is not a
firms,
great job.
The big three or four audit firms, audit Wall Street, paid by Wall Street, they haven't issued a qualified opinion yet.
Right.
What if you crisscross those where the government pays to have Wall Street audited and Wall Street pays to have the government audited? You would suddenly find a whole bunch of stuff and you'd have true governance for the first time. And the last little rule I'd love to change is the UN peace treaty states that one country will not assassinate the leader of another country. I would love to use its own governance and appeals process to amend that slightly and add half a sentence at the end that says, unless 10 other countries agree. Because then for $100,000 to Blackwater, you would have solved every war in the last 20 years.
Hey.
So welcome me to your country. It's far too crowded for me to be here, but I don't want to be there. But I just got there, but I don't want to ask to be rerouted on the first day of this month's Armageddon. Writing speeches with unleavened pencil. Rewrite the scrolls of history. In the dark with a flash, I'm whispering to myself and the other diplomats from Switzerland. Me and my constituents and Dan Rather. We like to gather and run the world with the help of a motherboard and a back scratcher, God's computer. I drink a vodka shooter out of an antique auction luger with a bunch of cranky cop recruiters. I offer the future in an office with a t-shirt that buttons up.
Just because the world runs on oil doesn't mean oil men should run the world. Just because the sky's my paved road doesn't mean you should pave a road over the sky.
Movie actress who's into pop culture, ethnic cleansing, genetic blending of musketeers who smile from ear to ear for thousands of years, step and just make the crowd cheer. Now, human shields, shrimp promoters will sleep over and dry your hair with a leaf blower. If you don't know the secret code word, then don't reorder our albums that contain three leaf clovers that give relief to ulcers. Did you know American and British royal fam will lick your oil pan and equate a suicide bomber with a loyal fan? Follow those two, they're looking out for the interests of a small group of Illuminati, Lydia's firstborn male with horns and a tail.
Pumping gasoline, how much do you want? Fill it up and clean the windshield with the rag. You'll need a quart of oil. My name is Clinton Moyle. I'm not from foreign soil. I've used a car antenna as a fencing foil. Sounds like your engine coil will make your grandson's attention boil. Contribute and give me the rest of the money before you go to the Statue of Liberty restroom, honey. I need to go inside of the store to get you some gum, cause your breath smells like the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Clinton, free with the use of a NASCAR gas card. It's a page turner where the red fern grows, fuel for the bedroom stove. Glad your red fern grows.
Rock the boat with your broccoli coat. Rock the boat with your broccoli coat.
Wouldn't you like to be posing nude in front of frozen food? Hook, line, and sinker, but a bookbinder thinker might blow a fuse. When the tube sock and pop up on TV gates, I sing a boombox and bug and soulless to take small chest against who's soul, sir. When I pull tools from a family yoke and hunger strike from a cobra, hunger sign, testy, biological warfare. Watch the TV screen spectacle, the herb of speaking clean, edible, leafy green vegetable, or a couch potato spud. When say no to drugs, and border in your throat, pull balls and cold chills, go through your arthritic when a carpet. The idea is that you'll get to move into your sandcastle by pressing buttons, brand a candle, with a set of instructions on how to turn a TV drying washer into a flying saucer. But not without being rushed to an eye doctor, cause I left wrapped so tight, it's acting like a runner. Don't industry smoke peddlers, but a wrestler.
Just because the world runs on oil doesn't mean oil men should run the world. Just because the sky's my paved road doesn't mean you should pave a road over the sky.
H.G. Wells said, history is a race between education and catastrophe. Well, never more so than today, because the world is set on a course of catastrophe. The emotional constipation and rigidity of the past 1,000 years that has set us up as territorial apes with thermonuclear arsenals, all of that is just set to, go critical. Nevertheless, you know, we are minded creatures in the presence of an evolving and rapidly shifting landscape of problems. And I think that it's a very hopeful sign to look around and notice that the only barrier to the solution of our problems are intellectual barriers, barriers in our own mind. We have the money, the technology, the mass communications, the scientific expertise, the remote sensing telemetry. What we don't have is the will to self-direct all of this technical apparatus toward a rational solution of our problems. But that means that the solution to our problems lies almost entirely in the human domain. And the human domain is the area where we observe the highest rate of unpredictable perturbation. So I don't see the situation as terminal or desperate at all. This is what it's like when a species prepares to depart for the stars. It is chaotic, but it is not disordered. It is more like a birth than anything else. I mean, there is rending of tissue, there is a sense of crisis, of unstoppable forward motion, but it turns out all according to plan, all to good end. The trick is to somehow attain this vision of the ordered correctness of what is happening when it seems so chaotic, and then to template it, to strengthen it each for ourselves, and then to replicate it and communicate it as a meme, because there is no percentage in paralysis here at the brink. The only possibility is of some kind of forward escape. You know, a forward escape is when you attain the goal by simply rushing through the gauntlet. And I think that this history that is a race between education and catastrophe is going to turn out to be a forward escape.
Anyway, sorry. Okay. This is a song from the perspective of God. You think I wrote are way too thick. Who needs a thousand metaphors to figure out you shouldn't be a dick? And I don't watch you when you sleep. Surprisingly, I don't use my omnipotence to be a fucking creep. You're not going to heaven. Why the fuck would you think I'd ever kick it with you? None of you are going to heaven. There's a trillion aliens cooler than you. You shouldn't abstain from rape just 'cause you think that I want you to. Shouldn't rape, 'cause rape is a fucked up thing to do. Pretty obvious, just don't think I'll rape people. Didn't think I had to write that one down for you. I don't think masturbation is obscene. It's absolutely natural and the weirdest thing I've ever seen. You make my job a living hell. I send gays to fix overpopulation. Boy, did that go well. You're not going to heaven. Eat 1,000 crackers, sing 1,000,000 hymns. None of you are going to heaven. You're not my children, you're a bad game of Sim. You shouldn't abstain from pork just 'cause you think that I want you to. You can eat pork, 'cause why the fuck would I give a shit? I created the universe, think I'm drawing the line at the fucking deli aisle? You argue and you bicker and you fight. Atheists and Catholics, Jews and Hindus argue day and night over what they think is true. But no one entertains the thought that maybe God does not believe in you. You pray so badly for heaven, knowing any day might be the day that you die. But maybe life on earth could be heaven. Doesn't just the thought of it make it worth a try? My love's the type of thing that you have to earn, and when you earn it, you won't need it. Oh, my love's the type of thing that you have to earn, and when you earn it, you won't need it. I'm not gonna give you love just 'cause I know that you want me to. If you want love, then the love has gotta come from you.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
GoFindTheOthers.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.